Hey, y'all. Welcome to Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. Next 3 hours, we're going to talk about money, how to basically help you improve your financial decision making there. A big part of the show is we take your calls, 504-260-0995. Download the Winning at Life app. You can connect to the, become a part of the Winning at Life Nation. Download that Winning at Life app to your smartphone. You can text, email, call the show through the Winning at Life app. And email directly, info@gregoryricks.com. So we're going to be going over some email calls today on the show, taking live calls, and those that reach out to us through social media and the app. We're going to go over concern sheets from some of my recent public speaking events. And that gives you a sense of what people are thinking out there when it comes to financial topics. We're going to talk about the jobs number as well. Where do I see interest rates going as well? And think you have a good idea. Last hour, you were able to listen to Dwayne Stein on Mortgage Gumbo. So, you know, he very well gives you some thoughts there on what he thinks about it also as well. And I believe Dwayne is going to be on our show in
the 20th.
2 weeks.
Yes.
In 2 weeks. Okay. Awesome. Looking forward to him attending as well. That was interesting news about Zillow this week as well, making a shift, and kind of crushed their stock as well when that happened also. So if you want a little bit of help, guidance, give us a call, 504-260-0995. And you heard James Parker there. Did you pull any BLMS numbers at all?
Oh, you know I did. You know that's my jam. I like looking at this because there's a 100% chance, if you're new to the show, there's a 100% chance that the numbers that you're hearing about do not match up with what you see on the spreadsheet necessarily. Most months, it's almost a different story. They like to talk about their headline number, cherry pick a couple things that fit whatever narrative their network prefers, and then run off into the distance. But when you go back and look at the table, you get a full picture.
Go ahead.
4.6% is the unemployment rate for October. So we are in, I don't want to say record low, but the record low territory. I mean, it doesn't get much smaller than this throughout history, maybe a percent or two down. You know, even Trump got down to 3.5, and that was just a breakneck low rate. But what we have here is a couple of behind the scenes numbers. The labor force participation rate stayed exactly the same. In good times, non-recovery times, we'd be okay with that. But when we're supposed to be building the economy back up, That's a little concerning. The number of employed people was up by 400,000. So you got to do a little bit of math to see how many people fell out of the workforce or got added or were discouraged or whatever to get that headline number that they come up with. But that stayed about the same. The amount of people not in the labor force, it was pretty flat as well.
Low pay isn't the problem as employers are raising wages to attract workers. Average private hourly earnings are up 4.9% year over year and 12.4% among production level workers in leisure and hospitality. But as you see, many employers still can't find workers. Vaccine mandates are not going to help with that, and neither will other government disincentives to work, including the, and this is something I brought up the other day, and it's including the $300 monthly child allowances, sweetened food stamps, and Obamacare subsidies. So you have people leave the labor force. Some people probably decided to retire early. And we've had a number of callers into the show over the past few weeks. And next thing they'll call back, what should I do with my 401k? It looks like I'm going to be leaving this job because of the vaccine mandate. So those mandates aren't helping at this time. You know, it was interesting yesterday that the, I believe, CEO of Pfizer, here's a statement he said. He said, COVID is over. I'm not quoting him exactly, but this is what he put out there. He said, COVID is over as we know it. You know, Pfizer has this other treatment that they're waiting for approval that I believe it was some number around being 89% effective. It's kind of like Tamiflu. For the flu, there's a treatment that if you have COVID, so it's going to reduce that. I thought when Biden spoke yesterday, I thought one of the things he was going to mention is he's going to come off of that mandate on firms with 100 or more employees. I just thought, and I was totally off base on that because I'd say he doubled down on his take on that from that standpoint. So we've got things where people maybe have figured out gig jobs and aren't ready to go back to work. The supplement, federal supplement has stopped, but you've not seen that increase, and others are just not ready to move back in to the workforce there. So this is still a struggle, even though we had quite a bit. Did you give the numbers on which sectors increase?
I did not talk sectors.
Yeah, we had hospitality increased 164,000, manufacturing 60,000, transportation 54,000, construction 44,000, and healthcare 37,000 there. So it's notable that job growth picked up in industries which employers said jobless benefits were making it harder to hire. Nursing homes experienced their first month of job growth, 12,000 is the number, and that's since 2020. Another 16,000 jobs were added in the home health care, the biggest increase since June of 2020. Any other numbers you saw there?
One interesting point of data is the teenagers, the people aged 16 to 19 years old, their unemployment rate in August was 11.2. It went up in September to 11.5. It went up again in October to 11.9. Literally every other demographic has fallen over the last 3 months. But teenage unemployment went up. So that's a concern that overlaps with that low skill pool of workers and the, you know, entry level jobs and minimum wage jobs and service and hospitality and leisure jobs. I have no explanation for that, and I just found it very odd.
Here's probably what you're going to see is probably a slow tick up in the participation. I don't know if there's something set to make a big impact on that, but it's like one day, maybe the light bulbs would just turn on and say, okay, I've got to get back to work, or I need more work in addition to these side gigs. And look, from one standpoint, I'd say there's probably more entrepreneurs out there today where people are starting their own businesses, doing their own things versus not wanting to go back into a job setting. So it's just going to take some time to come back. And, you know, this is an evolving situation with the workforce. And I think we'll look back probably 10 years from now and have, it maybe not that far out, but looking back will be a lot of clarity on the social changes that have come about at this time.
So overall, a good jobs report, but that also brings up a question. If unemployment's down to 4.6%, historically a low number, what are we doing spending $4 trillion on stimulus and infrastructure and rescue packages and all these other machinations that are happening at different levels of government to, quote unquote, assist with the economy and the recovery? Sounds like we're recovered.
Yeah, sounds like it is as well. But, you know, they passed that bill yesterday. I didn't think they were going to get it done. And they actually have it passed. So I believe what is next?
The Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema are next because it's got to go to the Senate. And then there's another package that's supposed to pass within 15 days, right?
Well, that's the one be trouble. The one that passed last night's already been through the Senate. This one yesterday's going to the president's desk. That one's done. So it's the next one coming up. And that's scheduled for what, the 15th?
Mm-hmm.
I believe I saw there. So that's what's coming forward. I thought the same way you did. I said, oh, well, this has got to go to the Senate. And actually, it does not in that case. You know, one of the things I was also reading when we come back, and we'll talk about computer chips also when we come back, is just kind of interesting in what's going on in that space, especially if you happen to have some of those used machines to build those chips. It's crazy out there on what it costs to get that equipment and to build, you know, get manufacturing going. How about this number? The S&P 500 gained at least 30% on a trailing one-year basis at the end of each of the last 9 months. That's February 21st through October. That's February of 2021 through October of 2021. The next big stretch of 30% or more trailing 12-month return since 1990 was the six-month period from November of 95 through April of 96. Interesting. 7 months out, as of yesterday, the bond market was priced to reflect less than a 50% chance that the Fed will raise interest rates after any future Fed meeting until June of 2022. Well, that's when the tapering is supposed to end. So, yeah, that's an easy call. They're not going to raise interest rates before then. And, you know, at times I do share with you Scott Minard. He's Global Chief Investment Officer over at Guggenheim. And he kind of has a take on this as well. The yield curve flattening carries a warning about looming rate hike. The long end of the U.S. Treasury curve has inverted, 30-year yields falling below 20-year yields for the first time since 2009. The flattening yield curve could be an indicator that the Fed will raise rates to a degree that could threaten another recession in a few years. And I do think the Fed's going to want to avoid that. An inversion of the long end of the curve is counterintuitive given the Fed's looming tapering announcement, but the flat forward curve measured by the 3-year forward, 3-month, and 10-year swap curve indicates that the market is likely looking ahead to the economic impact of hiking cycles to follow. They, Scott said, they expect the Federal Open Market Committee to announce tapering, and they did this few days ago at their November 3rd meeting, with purchases likely to end mid-June. So his forecast here was spot on. They had telegraphed that there was no surprise. Now, Scott's also moved forward with their expectation that Fed fund rate hikes will begin in the fourth quarter of 2022. A rapidly tightening labor market and a persistent overshoot of inflation target may justify raising the fund rate Fed funds target to a terminal range of 2 to 2.25%. That's pretty stout right there, considering we're at 0 to 0.25. My forecast isn't quite that high. I think the Fed probably will be in about 1.5 to 1.75. That's a number of hikes right there. And I've shared at some of my public speaking events this week, and I was going back to historical low interest rates and the federal. And I'm here going to give you a piece from Morgan Housel, and in his book Psychology of Money, he noted in the prologue that the Federal Reserve was not politically independent before 1951. The president and the Fed would coordinate policy. You know, we've seen this from time to time. President and the Fed would like the Fed to work together with them, but the Fed has appeared to act independently. In 1942, the Fed announced it would keep short-term interest rates at 0.38% to help finance the war. Rates didn't budge a single basis point for the next 7 years, and 3-month Treasury yield stayed at below 2%, get this, until the mid-1950s. The explicit reason for keeping rates down was to keep the cost of financing the equivalent of the $6 trillion we spent on the war low. Well, what have we spent recently? Very similar number right there. You know, that's why I say, you know, history is kind of telling us something here. But the low rates also did something else for returning GIs. It made borrowing to buy homes, cars, gadgets, and toys really cheap, which from a paranoid policymaker's perspective was great. Consumption became the explicit economic strategy in the years after World War II. And this is something I brought up recently as my take, where we were for a while like, yeah, interest rates are going to go up. We're going to get back to 3% 10-year treasuries, which would also put us, say, at a 30-year mortgage rate at about 4.75%, somewhere right there in that ballpark, I believe the math is. And I think rising interest rates and getting back to that point, I think, is more of a myth than I'm not believing we're going to get back there for quite a long time. The Fed, do they really want to have this debt financed at much higher interest rates? I don't think so. And they have to keep the economy going. The GDP has to continue going and growing. We're a leverage society. Pre-World War II, we were not a leverage society. Debt tremendously increased after that. You look at total U.S. household debt in 1945 was $29.4 billion. In 1955, this is a tremendous increase, $125.7 billion. And in 1965, $331.2 billion. Household debt grew in the 50s 1.5 times faster than it did during the 2000s debt plunge. We're a leveraged society. That's how everything works. People borrow money and we're okay with it. We go back to, gosh, my great grandfather. He was not one to borrow money at all. Neither was my grandmother. And from a grandmother's standpoint, she would have nothing to do with the stock market whatsoever. But I see that we're going to keep interest rates low, so it makes housing affordable, easier to buy. And the bigger thing is we, versus, say, my grandparents and great-grandparents, we as a society are comfortable with debt. Heck, people are retiring and having 30-year mortgages. And you know what? That's fine as long as it fits the budget. What would be better? Yeah, to be debt-free. But, you know, other thing we've talked about, like, you know, how look, you want to save 10 years to buy that car? Nobody wants to do that. So I want the car now from that standpoint. And carry credit card debt. So keeping interest rates low is going to allow that those cycles to continue and spending to continue. So I don't think we see interest rates go up significantly. There's going to be some catching up. There is going to be some pain to get, say, maybe to the two and a quarter that Scott Minard's mentioning. I think it's going to come in a little bit less than that.
Am I a little paranoid to already be concerned about the tapering that's starting to happen right now? They're taking $15 billion off every month until, what was it, June?
And it's going to accelerate. I don't think that's something to worry about. What's going to impact people is actual interest rates. We've seen a market pullback, and then we've seen new highs. The market's been really happy this week once again. But we're going to have pullbacks, and then it's going to go back up. They're, with them dialing it back, it isn't like they've just stopped it. They're still buying a lot every month. It's still in the neighborhood of $1 trillion a year is the pace. They're just dialing it back in 2 months by $30 billion. That means they're still buying some $70 billion a month. So maybe mid-year next year, the worry will be, but do they raise rates in the fourth quarter? Probably so, after the midterms. I don't think before either. So there you go. I am your host, Gregory Ricks, financial advisor, money manager, founder, CEO of Gregory Ricks & Associates, the Total Wealth Authority, and radio show host on weeknights and Saturdays. So give us a call.
Yep. Wine, Wisdom, and Food Experience. We got two of them coming up this week. Gregory's hosting them in Metairie at Fleming Steakhouse, November 10th, November 11th. Hey, you've been waiting. You've been putting it off. You've been wanting to go. Make it happen this week. Let's get all this ball rolling before we get bogged down with the Christmas and get our head off in the clouds and other things. Go ahead and get this taken care of this week. Go to GregoryRicks.com. pick one of the dates that fits your schedule better, and you can make a reservation online, or if you are a phone-only type person, 504-832-9200. Anything else for the club?
You can call that number right now and get on the list, and one of my team members will follow up with you Monday to confirm.
To the phones we go. William in Macomb, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, William?
Hello, how are you?
Hey, we're good. How can we help you?
I'm 63 years old. I'm on Social Security disability. In 2008, I went on Social Security disability. At the time, I was a vice president of a major manufacturer of auto parts for Ford Motor Company. And so I took a significant reduction in pay to go from a good-paying job to disability. My question is, my condition that caused me to have to go on disability has been in remission for about 6 months now. And my prognosis is that my condition will continue to stay in remission. So I am interested in going back into the workforce. Can I stop Social Security disability and go back to gainful employment, and what does that involve?
We had a good while back, we had a caller, similar situation on going back to work. And they do have a program where you can look at going back to work without necessarily ending it, in case there's a grace period regarding going back to work.
I believe it's a 9-month grace period.
Yeah, and many people who receive Social Security disability benefits are afraid to attempt the returning back to work for the fear of the effect it can have on their disability benefits, Medicare, and other benefits. Anyone who has been through the approval process for Social Security disability, you can relate. It's a pretty tough process to go through. When you inform SSA that you want to attempt to go back to work, you'll be assigned a trial period. You'll be able to work as many as 9 months while still retaining your eligibility for Social Security disability benefits. The amount of the benefits will be paid adjusted based on the amount that you earn. So if you are able to go back, this can work out for you, and they'll reduce what you're getting paid subject to how much you're receiving. So if that's what you're wanting to do, they do have that window for you. It's kind of a safety net there.
Okay, and at the end of that, do you completely go off disability and then work as, you know, say I wanted to work till I was 75 and then claim my regular Social Security income? Is that how that works?
Or yes. Yeah, at some point, and let's say you continue working to say, just use a number out there, 68. I'm not going to go to 75 on that, but say you go to 68 or 70. You know, you can, once you retire, you can turn on the Social Security, you'll be turning on your regular Social Security. An example of that, your FRA is what, 67, full retirement age?
66 and 8 months.
Okay. I think. Yeah, 66 and some change there. So, at that point, if you were, say, staying on Social Security disability, at that point, when you reach FRA, you would have automatically switched over to Social Security anyhow. It wouldn't be disability any longer at that point. But it looks like you're going to transition off of that in the coming months. So when you do elect to turn it back on in the future, you will be turning on Social Security benefits, because once you go off, you're not going to bounce back. You have to go back and requalify for those disability benefits.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Income that I make, say I go back to work, get off Social Security disability, the income that I make and I'm paying Social Security tax on will increase my ultimate benefit. Whenever I do retire.
Yeah, you're not hurting yourself on the disability part because you've not actually turned on Social Security benefits. Your regular retirement benefits have not been turned on, and you'll go back to the workforce, and you probably... How long have you been on disability? I don't recall that.
I've been 13 years.
That you've been on disability benefits?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good while. So that's impacted what you'll earn, but now you get back in the workforce and start adding credits and improving those benefits going forward in that case. Well, congratulations on the health coming back and being able to get back out there and do something you enjoy. There. But here's one of the other points. If you hang in here just a moment, it's financially in your favor to return to work if you're able to. SSA ignores the first $85 you earn each month, and thereafter, only half of your earned income is deducted from your monthly benefits. So if you earned $885, SSA would ignore the first $85 and deduct half of the remaining $800. Your disability benefits would be reduced by $400. So it's a good process that they have for you going back to work. So keep us updated. Thanks for listening to Winning at Life, William.
Thank you, William.
Thank you so much.
If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Yeah, we had a question about that not too long ago where that nine-month window came up again.
Yeah, it's a good program that way, and it makes it comfortable for people to go back to work that they're not just having to end it in that case. So I think that's a good part of the program, and he wants to work another decade or so. So he could defer his benefits, and once he gets to age 70, then turn on his benefit, even though he's continuing to work at that time. He wouldn't want to defer any longer than age 70, but he's also going to be adding credits and improving his work record. Because remember, it's based on the average of your best 35 years. Let's give you a few numbers here. Tax numbers. The top 0.1% of U.S. taxpayers in the tax year of 2018, and that's the latest year of the data, you know, data is always 2 years behind, made at least $2,514,209 in adjusted gross income and reported 10.3% of all adjusted gross income nationwide. The bottom 50% of U.S. taxpayers in the tax year 2018 made less than $22,704 in adjusted gross income, reported 11.6% of all adjusted gross income in the U.S. Interesting. What about this? Inflation, wages and benefits for all civilian workers in the U.S. increased by 1.3% in the third quarter of this year, the largest quarter-over-quarter change since the first quarter of 2003. Hey, in the top of the hour, we're going to update you on contribution limits that have been increased, and maybe, possibly, you can put more money away. I'm still interested to see how this is going to shake out. I guess we're going to know in a couple weeks here. Yeah, I'll define it a couple weeks here. Maybe we'll have an idea of where taxes are going. You know, I'd like to know. They're going up eventually, you know, because Trump's Tax Cut and Jobs Act was going to sunset anyhow from that standpoint. Wine, wisdom, and food events that I do, public speaking events. I always like to get concern sheets. I do this name dropping here. Oh, Frank Luntz, I had breakfast with him in Barcelona a few years back, and we were kind of talking about surveys and talking a little bit about my public events and wine and wisdom that I was doing. And he suggested this. He said it. He said if it was me before every event, I would give out concern sheets, ask people to say, what are your concerns? It's like, you know, what is he? He's the survey guru. So, you know, what else would he suggest? But he said that would really help you have a pulse. And I had never actually thought about it, and I've done that ever since. And you really have a pulse on speaking to groups and what they're thinking. I've done that ever since, and that's a part of the show that we utilize those concerns. So I've got a stack here, and in next hour, I'm going to give you some from one of the public events where I spoke this past week and go through some that's as current as of this past week. These are a little bit further back, but let's talk about this. You know, what are your primary concerns? On this one is starting an IRA or a SEP, investing, growth to build. So from starting an IRA or a SEP, sounds like this person was probably a small business person looking at, or self-employed and looking at a situation of how do they start putting away money. So a SEP, if you don't have employees, makes that real easy. If you have employees, there's a consideration on a SEP. You've got to contribute to the employees as well. Sometimes that could be a small business person that has one or two employees, but your contribution is kind of based on your earnings for that year, and you won't know that contribution number until your CPA has your return ready and say, okay, here's the contribution you need to put in to that account. Or starting an IRA, once again, is really easy to do, and I think you should be saving somewhere. Emergency money first, but you should be contributing somewhere where you're accumulating money long term. Charlie Munger, a phrase of his that I like is, do not interrupt compounding. You know, so in essence, don't interrupt the saving for the long term. You find a way that you can start putting away money on a regular basis, and do not let it be interrupted. And the other part there, they're talking about investing, growth to build. I like four asset classes in investing. I like stocks, and I would consider those as growth stocks. I like bonds, and both of those asset classes, I like using exchange-traded funds to do that. That gets me diversification in each of those areas. And I also like index-linked investing, where I get a portion of the upside of the indices without any downside exposure. And the last asset class, I like tactical. I like, because investments rotate, and I would like some of my money to follow where growth is going, where there's opportunities. And if something goes really bad in the short term, say like what happened in March of 2020. Yeah, the market pulled back because of the COVID going around and lockdowns. And I would like my risk reduced in that, and then shift to where the new momentum is going. So when you ask about growth to build, I don't think all your money should be in stocks. That's adding on a lot of risk, and it's almost, if you take on too much risk, could that put you out of the game? You know, it's a story I tell about the first guy to reach the summit of Mount Everest, Sir Edmund Hillary. He had made a number of attempts and failed, but he did live through the failed attempts. He got back off the mountain, but the first time for him to reach the summit, he did something different. He hired a guide, a Sherpa. Now, I don't know how that conversation went, but I think it went like this. Hey, I really need you to get me to the top of this mountain on this trip, but I don't need it done in such a way that I can't get off the mountain and live and tell about it. I kind of would look at it from that standpoint. What good does it do to get to the top if I can't go back and tell people the story? And that's from a financial standpoint. You don't need to take so much risk that it may exit you from the game, or cause you, if you're carrying too much risk, may cause you to make bad financial decisions. So that's why you need diversification. One of my team members, Brandon Allen, used this phrase, and I really love it. He says, diversification does not work all the time. It just works great over time. And that's what we want. We want diversification. That's why we like to use an index like the S&P 500. So I want diversification through my investments, but I want diversification in asset classes as well.
Here. Cindy in Madisonville, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Cindy?
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good. So you paid off your house?
I'm about to. I have the last $35,000 to pay off my house that I'm building.
Okay.
Yes. And I will have about $100,000 left in this high-yield savings account that I want to do something with. But I have I'm 62 years old, and I have about maybe five more years that I would like to work. And I just don't know what to do with the remaining, the amount, the $100,000. I know that I need to probably keep some in very safe, maybe a year's worth of salary, I don't know. But I would like to invest the rest, maybe. I have an IRA, which is a 2025, gets more conservative over time. So okay. I'm getting to the 2025 year.
So about how much is in that IRA?
It's $255,000.
Do you have a 401k or any other plans that you have money
in? Yes, sir.
So the IRA is a big part. And you have $100,000 in high-yield savings, but that also includes your emergency money, it sounds like. So we do want to set aside some money for expenses. And you gave a one-year part, and you mentioned salary, and you could use that number. I would think that's a larger number than expenses. And I like 1 year of that. And, you know, kind of, if I'm thinking and not knowing completely all the details in your income, you know, when somebody's retiring, you know what I like for a number of emergency money? Honestly, it's a ballpark of 50K, you know, is kind of, $50,000, I think, is a core number. So I don't know your annual income, and it might be less than that, might be more from that. But I just wanted to kind of put out there that, you know, when we talk about emergency money and we transition to retirement, are we generating an income that you continue to save? Probably not. So emergency money has to be looked at being around a lot further out. And if we deplete it, we've got to find a way to make that up. So that's probably coming off of assets possibly that are generating income. So from a standpoint, how is, for example, that IRA, how is that invested?
It's in a Vanguard 2025 fund.
Okay.
It's getting about 20% right now.
Okay. So it's kind of a mix of, is it an index or a mix of stocks and bonds probably? If it's a 2025 fund, typically what you're describing for the listeners is a target fund to where as you continue towards 2025, that portfolio is going to increase more to bonds there. That is a workable strategy that shifts you from aggressive to more conservative over time. I probably would not go about it completely that way, but that's not what you called about. You're a show listener, I guess, on a regular basis. I would think more in the line of the invest 50-50 philosophy and use multiple asset classes and have it balanced out subject to your risk tolerance, you know, the tolerance of the market going down. And I wouldn't want all of that money associated with stocks and bonds either anyhow. So when you look at the $100,000, we're going to peel off some emergency money. What do you look, is there something else you're wanting to do with that money down the road? That's after-tax money, and that's kind of special money because you're not owing any taxes on it, are you?
No, I'm not at this point.
Yep, and it's good to have type of money too.
Okay. Yes. I live pretty conservatively, and I do still work, so I'm working for the state, and so I don't make a whole lot, probably about $32,000 or something like that.
Okay.
But I could possibly work until I'm 70. I really don't know yet. I just have to feel comfortable with having enough money to live the rest of my life.
Are you going to be eligible for Social Security benefits?
I will.
Okay. And do you have...
I opted out of the laser, the retirement with the state.
Okay. That's what my next question was going to be. So you do have those benefits available to you as well. And then looking at where, you know, just kind of say you've got about 350,000 assets. You're going to put about 30,000 based on what you shared with me on income. So about 30,000 is going to be considered emergency. So you want to get some upside to that 100,000 because it's going to need to become a part of overall generating income in what, 5 or 6 years, it sounded like you were talking about, even though you may work longer. We always kind of have to look at what that opportunity is. So I just think there should be a balance of risk and safety so as you don't get injured, because this is kind of really an important period going forward. You're possibly within 5 years of retirement. We know there's probably some volatility going to show up again, and you just need that to where you can weather any short term that it doesn't impact all of your money. And I'm a little worried about that $250,000 all in one place. I don't think you have enough diversification asset class from that standpoint. So I think you should consider that along with what is going to be done with the $100,000 also.
That's okay.
Kind of my thoughts on that from that standpoint. We need diversification asset class wise and diversification in the investments also. Mm-hmm. With an income plan kind of put in place, how much are you going to need and how will that be turned on? Is there any tax efficient opportunities going forward, maybe to reduce some possible Roth conversions that might really be efficient for you? You know, we don't like to create a bunch of tax bills and stuff, but might there be some efficiency that helps your money go further into retirement as well? So that's some of the things I'm thinking about. Any other questions?
Okay. I don't think so.
Okay. Cindy, you ought to call my office, 504-832-9200, and at least start a conversation to get some more personalization on that help. We can run a tax efficiency report for you. We can do a Social Security planning report and put together an income plan for you and show you how to balance out these assets. No obligation to do that, and that's for the rest of the listeners as well. Thank you for calling.
I would like to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Where are you located?
Well, we have an office in Mandeville, which is probably not too far from you. You called us from Madisonville, so we have a Mandeville office. We're in Metairie, Louisiana, and Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and over there in Gulfport, Mississippi as well on Lorraine Road. So we're not
far from you. Okay, I will call you.
Okay.
Okay.
Awesome, Cindy. You have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All your money in stocks. What's the problem with that?
Well, in retirement, I'll give you a situation real quick here, and then we'll get to Norman in a couple minutes. If you're retired, taking income, and you're one of those that put all your money in stocks, and I'll use the S&P 500 as an example. If you did so 21 years ago, with year ending in 2020 is the example I'm giving you here. And you use Vanguard's S&P 500 fund as part of this example. But you put $1 million in that account and you start taking 4% income and you're going to inflate it at 3% every year. So you start, year one's a $40,000 distribution. At the end of 21 years, that distribution last year was going to be a little bit more than $72,000 because you're inflating it each year at 3%. You started with $1 million, had it invested, stayed the course with the ups and downs, and at the end of last year, you would have a balance of a little bit more than $314,000. And what if your life expectancy is another 10 or 15 years? Yikes, it looks like you might run out of money. That's why I believe the Invest 50-50 philosophy is a better way to invest, which gives you asset diversification and diversification within those asset classes. What's the purpose of that? To level out the ride and better support an income stream like I described and keep the assets intact. What we're wanting to do is increase the likelihood of successful income generating for a long period of time and kind of smooth out the ride. That's what can happen if you put everything in stocks. And what would fix that is better diversification.
Norman in Garyville, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Norman?
Well, I just wanted to give you guys a compliment that when I started calling y'all back then, I remember y'all had mentioned, well, you know, there's no such thing as a Social Security University. You need to check on your own and stuff like that. So I went down there. I could have started drawing my Social Security. I would have lost $484 the rest of my life. And I could only have made $17,000 per year the rest of my life. But listening to you guys, and I work turnarounds off and on, so I didn't really need the money. Now I'm drawing my full Social Security. It's like another payday after my other two retirements coming in. I mean, I'm like, every time I get that direct deposit, I think of you guys. I got extra like almost $500 in my checking account because I listened to you guys. I didn't run down there and draw it. So it's like, wow. I'm just fascinated every payday. So
that is awesome. And thanks for sharing that success. You know, it's kind of what we want to do is help everyone improve their decision making. And you just said that little bit of help, that was another, what, $6,000 a year to you? That's pretty darn good money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then the lady told me, she said, you know, I'm so glad you came in here for yourself. I said, well, what do you mean by that? She said, the average guy I talked to your age has already started drawing it, and they didn't get their increase, and it penalized. She said, they walk out of here mad at me. She said, I'm glad that you did it for yourself. I said, no, but listen to that radio station. That's the ones that did that. Boy, she looked at me with deer in the headlights. I said, you need to listen to that, too, before you retire. So we talked some more. But, yeah, I mean, like today, it's you figure another – I'm almost like $2,000 a month I'm getting with that extra $484. And then next year, we're going to get, what, extra $100 or something?
Yeah, it's a little more than 5%. Yeah, it's over 5% the raise there. We don't know what that Medicare premium is going to be, but it's not going to eat all that up.
Well, no, that's another thing, too. I told you I was retired military. I'm on a VA. And you said, well, if you don't need it, you're happy. And we went back and forth. So listen, tell you on that, too. I didn't really need it because and we talked about that, so I don't pay to Medicaid. I'm right here with the VA, praise Jesus. I'm in good health.
Awesome.
I'm okay. So I'm saving more. I'm not even in Medicare because I listened to what y'all said about, you know, there's no such thing as Social Security University, and I went to Social Security and putting y'all together in a circle, a lot of these guys, and she said that, and you said that too, basically, they listened to hearsay, coulda, and that ain't getting it because once you start drawing it, now I did find out, once you draw it, you can have a forgiveness time in there sometime, but because you got to pay all that money back before you start drawing it the second time, something like that.
That's the first year. If you want to undo it as if it never happened, being the starting of it, you have 12 months to do that, and you have to pay it back. So you know what? That doesn't happen very much.
But the thing is, too, I was working this job, and this guy had lost his job on the oil rig, and he started drawing everything early. He pushed the panic button, and you and I, we'd had this conversation. He said, I don't know what to do. I'm going to make more money on this job and be penalized. I said, well, thinking about our conversation, I said, well, how long you've been drawing it? It was like 7 months or so. I said, you need to call Social Security, talk to them. You want to stop? And I kind of filled him in on stuff we talked about. You know, he did that about a few months later. Man, that guy thought, I was so smart, and not really. I was just passing y'all information.
Oh, well, see, you passed it along, the help. That's awesome, Norman.
And, you know, knowledge is power. These guys, they think, and I don't understand this part. Y'all smart, so y'all not going to understand it either. If you never had it, how could you miss it? Because he's like this one guy, he's really big on, he draw his Social Security at 62. He's going on, he took that pay cut. Now he's going on 81 years old. Look, all that money he lost by drawing it early. He said, you know, I could die. I'll never get that money. I said, well, if you're going to be dead, you ain't going to miss the money anyway. But you're still a young guy. But these guys, they get the panic button. They throw in. But later on in life, they regret drawing that.
Yeah.
And that's why I always try to tell them, you know, you need to listen. I didn't know that y'all educated me, and I went along A, B, C, D, E, and now every month, I mean, it's like another week's work that I'm getting. And look, next year, I'm going to get that full raise, too. I'm not going to be penalized.
Yeah, about your friend there that turned it on early, and now he's 81. If he had waited to FRA, he isn't going to have lost anything. He'd have pulled out the same amount of money, but going forward, he would be making more by having deferred there. So, and that's one thing about it, that when you turn it on early, you have locked in that reduction forever. You can't like go back and undo that past that 1 year. Thanks for listening, Norman, and sharing your stories. We appreciate out there.
Thank you.
Passing this information forward. That's a lot of help to people.
Hey, I love Norman's verbiage. We need to hold on to this. When he talked about the people who push the panic button, that's a lot of reasons why people start it as soon as they can. They get laid off. What am I going to do? Well, I have this available. Maybe it's not mathematically the best, but I need it. Panic, hit it, turn it on, regret.
Yeah. And the other story he told about one of his friends turning it on early and then regretting it because he's going to make a bunch of money. He got back to work. And basically, if you've turned it on before full retirement age, every $2 you make over $18,960 this year, every $2 over that, they're going to take a dollar back for every $2. Over that amount. And yeah, that could, if you're making a lot, that's a pretty big penalty because they will claw that back.
Well, and also the guy that's 81 now, this is about the time, mathematically speaking, he gets ahead. I like it when you add up those missed checks.
Yeah, let me explain that a little bit more. Let's say you turn it on, it's your benefit, and you turn it on at 62, or you could have waited to full retirement age, or you defer to age 70. If you had turned on any of those points and looked out to age 80, both of those choices would have given you about the same amount. Technically, the FRA number would give you a little bit more by age 80, but it's the same amount if you had turned it on at 62. But like this gentleman he described, he lives to 81. That guy's going to live much further. He would be getting more. He didn't lose anything by waiting. He's actually losing because he started early. And it sounds like he didn't have to start it. He just wanted it. And that's what some people do. It's like, I want to get my money. You know, it's my money. I want it now. Well, you just possibly penalized yourself later. We don't know when we're going to die. But if you're in retirement benefit age, able to turn it on, one of the things you look at is your health. How long do you think you're going to live? If you're in bad health and don't think you're going to go a long time, that would be one of the factors of turning it on early. But you're really good health. And let's say you're 60 and your mom and dad are still alive and they're in good health. You know you're probably going to be better off deferring that start date. You know, and thinking about it, you know, I'm CEO and founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. Our firm, my day job is that, you know, I do the radio weeknights and on Saturdays. And we started the show at 10 o'clock this morning, and we will finish up at a couple minutes before one. It technically right? So essentially we go to 1 o'clock, and a good friend of ours started an hour before our show at 9, Dwayne Stein. He's host of Mortgage Gumbo, and he's going to guest on our show in 2 weeks. So you'll want to tune in for that as well. And I think we've got Jude Heath, a CPA, head of J. Heath & Company, is going to guest next week on the show, I believe. So, and that'll be in the second hour and kind of be all things taxes. And that is one of the big topics. I get a lot of questions about that when I speak publicly. But as far as my firm, we're a growing firm. We've got 4 offices, and I think we added 3 offices over the past couple of years and double the headquarters space last year during COVID. And I thought that was pretty good timing since things cost a lot more. Imagine having to do that remodel and expansion in the present tight workplace environment. So with that said, we are hiring people, and So I just thought I'd put it out there on the radio. If somebody thinks that they might be qualified to work on customer service side of our firm, I'd say reach out. So we're hiring. We're looking for somebody for our Baton Rouge office, and we're looking for a couple more people in our Metairie office as well. So if you're looking to do that here, send your resume to info@gregoryricks.com, and maybe we'll have a place for you. Some, if you want to work with a growing company with great benefits, a great culture, fun place to work that's flexible, yeah, send your resume over to info@gregoryricks.com, and perhaps we can talk. What are we doing next? Here it is. IRS has given us some new information. I want to share this with you. IRS increases 401k contribution limit for 2022, but they left the IRAs the same. That was disappointing. That was really disappointing in my opinion. So, but workers will be able to set more aside in 401ks, which, okay, I was disappointed they didn't increase the IRA or Roth opportunities, but you know, where does most of the money go? Into company plans. So the 401k contribution limit is increasing to $20,500 next year, a $1,000 increase from this year's maximum of $19,500. The higher limit also applies to employees with 403b and most 457 and thrift savings plans. Other basic limits, such as the catch-up contribution of $6,500 for anyone over 50, remains unchanged. Can I be disappointed on that? Yeah, mm-hmm. I can. I would like that to be more as well, but they're just, okay. At least we do get that extra $1,000 in there, so I know I'll be increasing mine. That means I'll be able to have a new max, because I personally hit the max in that every year, so my contribution to my 401k will go up to $20,500 with the catch up. I'm getting in $27,000 next year, because you do know I'm over 50. So that's pretty cool that I get to put another $1,000 away. So the increase is part of an annual cost of living adjustment that takes into account inflation. As a result of the changes, do not require any legislative approval. So good. Had nothing to do with anything they're trying to pass or hold it back. But despite a 30-year high in inflation, the IRS does not increase the contribution maximums for IRAs, leaving the limit unchanged, $6,000 for 2022. That figure has not changed since 2019. What's up with that? The catch-up contribution for IRAs also stay at $1,000, meaning anyone 50 or older can put away $7,000 next year. So that's kind of where we are. Let's see, what else do we have here? The withdrawal age is still 59 and a half, the kind of magic number there, so you don't have 10% early penalties, was not changed. The newest income phase out from the IRS rises to $144,000 from $129,000 for individuals, and $214,000 up to $214,000. Where did I go? Computer just jumped my list away from me. How do you like that? Now I'll work back. See, that's what happens. Live radio. Yeah, it's up. Increased up to $214,000 from $200,000 for married couples who file jointly. So once again, so means you can make more money and not be phased out of your contributions from deductible limits.
I have a question.
Okay.
You said you could, I don't know if you're going to, but you could do 27,000. Can you add where did all that stack up from? Where'd that number come from? It was,
well, it's 20,500 is the new max in your 401k, and the catch up contribution is, did I give that number right? Is it
6,500? Was that?
Yeah, but let's just double check that I did that right. Yeah, it's 6,500 is the catch up limit. Okay. So that gets me to $27,000.
So you and the spouse could jointly put away $54,000?
Yes.
See, that starts to sound like a whole lot of money.
That gets into some real money. And, you know, when you kind of think about it, you know, depending on where you are income-wise, but, you know, excluding Social Security factoring in, you know, if you've accumulated $1 million, what is its capability? Depending on how you invest, with the invest 50-50, I think it's reasonable that it can support a 4% income stream with some inflation of it into the future. But if you're going to use all risk, you have to drop that under 3%, probably down to 2.5%. So $1 million, if you're going to use stocks only, because its volatility is going to eat up your account over time based on history. So that you would only be taking $25,000. Out in that case, but then Social Security on that. So it depends on household income, but $1 million is kind of $40,000 in income. Social Security benefits might be 25. So you're at 65, or with a spouse, call it 40 and 40. So there's 80 right there. So when you kind of mix those two together, if you're at $500,000 in assets, then your capability is about $20,000 a year. So putting, and that's where on the back end, that's kind of where, you know what the hardest part to save is? Probably from 20 to 40. Less income, you got to pay for those kids and get them grown and out of school. Then you get beyond 40. Now you can start saving money. But if you started saving a little bit, then you have that compound effect. Where did 80% of Warren Buffett's wealth come from? Compounding. And 80% of his wealth, he built up after he qualified for Social Security benefits.
Mike in Gulfport, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Mike?
I'm just curious. I'm kind of new to the traditional versus Roth, and my 401k offers Roth assets. What should I be targeting, you know, overall with the percentage that's Roth and what's traditional?
I'd put as much as I could into the Roth. What is your age, Mike? That'll help us.
I'll be 43 very shortly.
Okay. So you have already been contributing to this, or this is a new 401k you're getting to participate in from your standpoint?
I've already been in it. I probably have about 90% of the assets are traditional right now, just because, you know, I wasn't educated enough to realize it was even an option.
Yeah, and a magic thing about Roth is time and compounding, and you still have a good bit of time to build up assets there. You know, people that when we recently, I gave some numbers on how much money's in traditional versus Roth, and it's somewhere where the average 401k out there is somewhere around $150,000, and the average Roth is somewhere around $40,000 out there. So most people have less than that, but at least they have it. And this is what your opportunity. Here's what you have to think about, though. If you start putting money in the Roth, that's going to be after-tax dollars you're contributing, where in the traditional side, that money's going in pre-tax. So it's kind of like Uncle Sam's helping you there because he's not taxing you on that money, which lowers your tax bill because that money's going into the traditional account. Now, if you want to start putting money into that and let's say the company does matching and you're going to do that amount, your contributions are going to go into the Roth after tax. So there's not going to be any pre-tax benefit. It's after tax dollars. The match, because of the benefit, the company's giving you that match, I would put that in the traditional side in that case. So you're not paying a tax on the traditional or on the match contribution of that. That's what I would look at structuring it that way. And that's kind of my rule of thumb. It just depends on how much you're contributing. You know, good news is we get to put more in our 401ks if you're maxing it out, but I would try to find at least a mix and start getting money into that Roth because you still have a lot of time, assuming you're going to work to somewhere into your 60s. Hypothetically, you can build up a good bit there. Thoughts?
Right, and the other question, so I'm in a situation where I'm maxing out my 401k, but my income is such that I'm bumping up against that limit to be able to contribute to my IRA. Should I use a portion of that pre-tax into my 401k to make sure I stay under that threshold and able to also max out the Roth IRA.
Now, one of your options is you, depending on income limits, because there's a limit on upside of contributions to a Roth outside of your 401k, that could be one of the things, once again, subject to your income limits, you could contribute to a Roth with after-tax dollars outside of your 401k. Otherwise, I would get a blend.
I'm actually doing that on my Roth IRA, but so if I contribute pre-tax dollars, that'll theoretically bring down my taxable income and keep me in the threshold to be able to contribute to Roth IRA, or am I just worrying about something that I shouldn't be worrying about?
Well, I don't know where you are from an income limit on Roths from that standpoint, but if you could do both, that's even better, to contribute to the Roth outside and contribute to the Roth within your company plan. That'd be the ultimate, because then you're getting more money in that. And remember, we have three taxable worlds. We've got this pre-tax money that you've been doing a great deal of in there. It's going to be taxed as ordinary income when it comes out, but you're going to need some of this tax-free money in retirement, and you have time to start impacting that. And then you should also have some after-tax savings also out there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your information.
Okay. Awesome. Hope that helps you out. Yeah. Modified adjusted gross income must be under $139,000. And I'm just pulled up here some guides here. So I think this has been updated and increased, but $139,000 for the tax year 2020 if you're a single person, and under $140,000 for 2021. Let me go back to what we were covering a few minutes ago on that. I think those numbers did go up. Let's look at this here. Yeah, looks like it did. The phase out increased to $144,000 for this coming year on Roth contributions. So that helps. And then for a household, goes up to $214,000. So once again, opportunity there to get more money in it. You start, think of it, you know, once again, diversification. Think of it from a tax standpoint. Can you diversify? One of his other options is, does he have room to do some Roth conversions within his plan there as well? So that could be an option also, depending on what margin he has in his tax brackets right there. And what I'm talking about on margin is just hypothetically, this isn't going to be accurate to any tax bracket, but just say your next tax bracket, for you to hit the next tax bracket, you've got, say, $30,000 in room between where your income is and the next threshold. That is margin. So you could do a conversion without going into the next tax bracket by maybe converting $10,000, $20,000, $25,000 there and shift some of that money so it can grow into the future and create more tax-free income.
Whew.
I know, that's a lot.
And I guess we have time to even start a comment card. You want to try and run through some of those? That's what we were going to do before Mike called, and now we're kind of walking into a news break here.
How about this? Determine the best strategy. These comment cards, concern sheets I get from public speaking. Here's one. Determine the best strategy for reducing taxes and ensure I have enough money to get my family financially secure. First off, you need to put together a plan that is reviewable, and strategies can be updated yearly going forward. And once again, I think when you kind of look at reducing, we do a report every year for clients, and I can't say the best strategy. It depends on your situation. Is there Roth opportunities? Is there conversion opportunities? Could you do tax harvesting there? You need to look at what opportunities are available and take advantage of them every year. This is forward planning, not end of year planning, but forward planning to find tax efficiency. And if you can create more tax efficiency, your money can go further, which will help you financially be financially better and secure for your family.
Jan in Covington, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Jan?
I just have a couple of young adults that still live with me. They're in college, and they have a good bit of savings, you know, like $15,000 just sitting in a savings account. So we were just wondering what would be the best investment option for them. We're kind of leery about, you know, the market and everything, and just maybe trying to get some advice on what to do with some of the money.
So what are their ages again?
25 and 28.
25 and 28. They have a pretty good time horizon then. They're
right.
Yeah, at that age. So are they saving some money, investing or saving from that? What are they kind of currently doing?
They're just saving. It's just like it's sitting in a savings account. So, you know, not really making any money off of it. But they've just been kind of holding on to it and just wanted some advice about what maybe to do with it to invest.
One of the things I think is really important is taking a long view for a young person. But this has to be, there's two types of money. Is this emergency money? Is this something, and I'm going to throw out some things. Is this money that, let's say they're single and thinking about getting married, they got to buy a ring. You know, in society, we kind of leverage things. I don't need your answer yet. Or is it you're saving up to buy a house? Or a car, you know, it depends on what this money for, or is this emergency money, or it isn't for any of those things, then this we're talking about is investment money. And these are 20 somethings here where they have a lot of time. Now I'll let you answer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll just talk and say about my son. His is purely just saving, just looking to invest.
Okay.
He has no, plans really.
So he does have to have emergency money, and this is where something goes bad, the engine breaks on the car, or you know some reason where he's like, God, I need $3,000. So we have to have some emergency money so the investment money can be left there, because the real magic about this is compounding over time. And Charlie Munger, you know, Warren Buffett's partner, one thing he always keeps reminding people of is do not let that become interrupted. Don't invest in a way that gets you kicked out the game. We want to stay in the game and keep it growing. Yeah, and you may have heard me mention earlier in the show, Warren Buffett, 80% of his wealth came to him after he qualified for Social Security. So it's just the compounding. And even for you, Jan, when you get to retirement, why should growth of your retirement and your savings, why should it stop? If you're doing some smart things, maybe it even keeps growing while you start using it. And here's something I want to share that helps on this decision on what I'm going to suggest to them. But if we look at the market over the past 71 years, and we look at it on rolling averages, and let's say if you looked at it every day over the past 71 years, it's up 54% of the time, which means it's down 46% of the time. So it means kind of half the time you look at it, it's depressing. Well, don't look at it every day. But if you look at it on a yearly basis, rolling yearly basis, it's up 73% of the time. If you look at it every 5 years, it's up 79% of the time. 10 years, it's up 89% of the time. And to date, if you looked at it, once again, rolling, meaning each year you look at it, you're looking at a 20-year period. We're up 100% of the time. So I don't think all money should be in stocks, but I tell you what I've advised my kids to do and what we have them. I have my kids in the S&P 500. And it isn't like they've got lots and lots. As their assets grow, there'll be more diversification. But being they're kind of doing their IRA contribution every year, and they've started this a couple years ago, we're doing S&P 500 with our kids.
Okay, great.
Is how we're guiding them at this time. And as it continues growth, then we're going to diversify once again. But they're going to leave it there a long time. This is not emergency money.
So do it like do an IRA.
Yes, but a Roth. My kids are doing Roths. Imagine that compounding. They're going to need a couple $1 million 40 years from now at minimum to retire. Just think of it. We got inflation happening. Things are going to cost a lot more.
Right. Okay.
Awesome.
Well, we'll start one of those.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Jen. Pass it forward. On the last hour, I mentioned that, you know, my firm, if you're kind of like, well, who's this Gregory fella? Well, I'm CEO, founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates, the Total Wealth Authority. It's a financial advisory firm and money manager. We help people improve their financial decisions. And my day job, I've been in this industry, show my age, for neighborhood of close to 40 years. So a lot of experience and a lot of track record. I have offices in Mandeville, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Metairie, Louisiana, and in Gulfport, Mississippi. We do phone meetings, we do video meetings, you know, the Zoom thing, and in-office meetings. And we use small conference rooms, well, not small conference rooms, but we sit around a conference table, you know, and I want you to have your feeling of like, you kind of feel like, gosh, I'm in somebody's house and it's comfortable. You know, not some business setting. We don't pressure people. I look at working with us as kind of like dating. I tell this story often, and I give an example of my wife and how that started. And it started with a lunch date. Now, she does, if she's telling the story, she said, yeah, despite him showing up wearing cargo pants, she enjoyed the lunch. I didn't wear cargo pants around her again after that, because I found out later that was kind of a negative. But she liked when I put on my gold rim glasses. She said I looked really intelligent at that point. Well, I hope she thought I was intelligent as well.
What, cargo pants don't count as intelligent?
No, it does not. Oh. That was a takeaway. Oh. But obviously I overcame it, because we spoke later that day and set up another lunch date. And after that, we got together again and again, and 2 years later, we were married. So I look at this business and how do we work with people? There's, you know, you come and have a meeting with us, and there's stuff we're going to prepare from that meeting and show you, and strategies and a plan we put together is the next meeting. And if you want to have another meeting, we'll do another meeting. So next thing you know, if we keep having meetings and working with you and helping you improve your financial decisions, all of a sudden we're working together. So there's no hard line or something. Oh, you've got to do something or sign something on a particular meeting. You don't. If it goes good, we're working together. If you don't come back, well, then guess what? We're not working together. So if she had ended it on the second or third date, kind of say, you know, that cargo thing, I just can't get over it. Well, then we wouldn't have been continue dating to get married. It would have ended in that case. I look at it that way. So we make it easy for you to get some help. And if you want to start a conversation, call my office, 504-832-9200. That's 504-832-9200. And you can connect with my organization through the Winning at Life app also, and go to the website. There's a tremendous amount of information there and resources. But what we really want you to do is invest in a way that you don't have to exit that opportunity. And another way to think about it, and I've been going through sharing some thoughts on one of the many books I'm reading at the same time, and I have finished this one. It's Psychology of Money, but I've got this line here highlighted, and it's by Morgan Housel. Here's the line. Manage your money in a way that helps you sleep at night. We manage money in a way that I believe helps you sleep at night. And that's why I always am talking about the invest 50-50 philosophy, where we use multiple asset classes and in each we diversify. Ultimately, you don't want to invest in a way that's going to cause you to worry or sleep at night or wake up in the middle of the night worrying. That is not healthy. That is not good. And you're probably going to make changes the next morning. So what it also tells me is if you're worrying and sleep, you have too much risk. And this is an example of what I shared last hour, and I'll share it again. But think about it. If you're, and people do this, and it's a mistake, and a lot of times they do this in the 401k. If you've got a long-time horizon, then you could carry that much risk. But if your horizon is short, what I'm talking about, your horizon is how long can this money work before you need to start taking income from it or task it to do something or what's its purpose? You know, and an example of short term is somebody said, yeah, I sold this property. I've got a couple hundred thousand I need to do something with. Okay. How long are you needing to do something with, you know, when you say, I got to do something with it. Well, what do you mean? Well, I want to invest it. Well, how long can it be invested? I don't know, 9-12 months, a little more than a year, because I might find something else I want to buy with it. Well, that is not investment money. You need to answer that, well, I've got years. Then I want to go, well, is it more or less than 5 years or more or less than 10 years? Because the longer that time horizon is, you can increase some of the risk and move through the ups and downs. But I don't believe outside of our discussion with Jan and young people, I don't think all the money, and it's subject to how much in assets, but I don't think all the money should be at risk. And especially if it causes you to lose sleep at night or to make decisions that would cause you to exit the investments. Why? You don't want to exit because you're interrupting the growth. And I'll repeat again, Charlie Munger says, do not let the compounding stop. You need to keep that growth going and you need to make good decisions for that even into retirement. Why not have things continue to grow? Here's another idea from him. If you want to do better as an investor, the single most powerful thing you can do is increase your time horizon. Time is the most powerful force in investing. It makes little things grow big, and it makes big mistakes fade away. If you can't neutralize luck and risk, but it pushes the results closer towards what people deserve. Time is a powerful thing, and increasing that horizon makes a big deal. And that's why I shared with Jan earlier, you know, when you look at the market on a daily basis based on the past 71 years, it's up 54% of the time, which means it's down 46. So it's kind of, you know, it's that 50-50 thing. But if you're looking at it over 5-year rolling time periods, it's up 79% of the time. 10-year is up 89% of the time. So the longer you allow it to work, the better. And that's one reason I like multiple asset classes. In our Invest 50-50, I think you should have some of your money in stocks, some in bonds. And I like exchange-traded funds because it's efficient. It creates diversification using the indices. Also, yeah, I like index-linked investing where an insurance company takes the risk off the table. So we get a portion of the upside of an index, but we do not have exposure to negative returns or losing money when the index goes down. And the fourth, I like to be tactical. I want some of my money following momentum. Remember, investment world, things cycle. Everything doesn't work all the time. So I want tactical money, meaning it's going to follow momentum. And if there's an event that really gets ugly, like March of 2020 is an example, COVID, markets dropped a lot. I want that money in that asset class to be able to adjust away and minimize. So what we're doing with those four asset classes, we're not giving up growth. We're just smoothing out the ride. I don't need stock market returns on all my money. I need a more levelized ride so I can sleep at night, so I can stay in the game, and I can keep growth going for years and continue it even when I start taking income. Guess what? Uncle Sam's letting you put more money in your company plans next year. Workers will be able to set aside more money in 2022. They're blaming it on inflation. It doesn't require legislation. They are going to let us put more in. Here's the number. An employee contribution limit for 401k plans is increasing to $20,500 next year. Yes, it's a $1,000 increase from this year's max of $19,500. I'm a fan of this. I wish they'd let us do more, but I get to put another $1,000 in because I cap mine in my company plan every year. The higher limit also applies to those who have 403B and most 457 and thrift savings plans. Other basic limits, such as the catch-up contribution of $6,500 for anyone over 50, remain unchanged. Just a fraction of people, about 8.5% funneling money into a contribution account, hit the maximum in 2018, according to Congressional Research Service. We need to up that. Come on, more of you. Let's get it over 10%. It's just a 1.5% bump. More of you. Put more in. So despite a 30-year high inflation rate, the IRS did not increase contribution maximums for IRAs. They left the limit unchanged. It's going to be $6,000 for 2022, and you have a $1,000 catch-up if you're over age 50. That's a little disappointing. I want to get more into my Roth as well. That's a big part there, is, gosh, I want to get more in that. I want tax-free for the future, but maybe they'll increase that next year to $7,000 and double the, I'm going to be wishful here. Can we get the contribution up to $7,000 and then double the catch-up for over 50? That's on my wish list for 2023. So maybe they'll help us out. I'm just saying, the government spending money like they stole it. So let us save some more. Let us save some more, those that are wanting to save. How you like that, James?
Well,
like
if you
that?
Can, yeah, absolutely.
So we do need more of that. Let's see. What else got here? I'd mentioned this to you on the break. And here's the saying, define the game that you're playing. We're talking about investing. Make sure your actions are not being influenced by people playing a different game. Once again, the game is investing. You know how somebody will say, well, I'm doing this, I'm buying these stocks and doing this thing. This is what you should be doing. Be careful with that, where somebody's giving you tips, or I heard, you know, my boss does this and this, and maybe you ought to try doing that. And you take a flyer on something. Oh, be something good. Well, it might be a lot riskier. And when you're kind of having a glass of wine with a friend and you get into that and they start telling you things, they're not pulling back the curtains and telling you their whole financial situation. And I'm pretty sure you're not sharing yours either. So be careful of being influenced into doing something that could hurt you later or cause you to exit from the game. I want you to be able to keep investing going. And this is, you know, we have people talking about saving, calling us with questions and such. And do you have to have a reason to save? No, you don't. You don't need a specific reason to save. It's great to save for a car or a down payment or a medical emergency. But savings for things that are impossible to predict or define is one of the best reasons to save. Everyone's life is a continuous chain of surprises. That is so true. Savings that aren't earmarked for anything in particular is a hedge against life's inevitable ability to surprise the heck out of you at the worst possible moment. You ever use that phrase, it's always something? It's always something. Why? It's stuff happens to us every day or every week or every month. Well, I didn't quite expect that. Oh, that's a surprise. So from a financial standpoint, do you need a reason to save? No, you should be saving. How much should you save? As much as you can. Why do I need to put a number on it? Max out your 401k. and then save some more emergency fund. Oh, I've got plenty in it. Well, make it bigger. Why? Don't know, but we'll know one day. So what should you do? Just save.
Yeah. And look, maybe always, it's always something. Maybe that doesn't happen. And you're one of the few people who just skates through life with no great obstacles thrown in front of you. And then what situation are you in? Oh, you got this big pile of money you've been saving this whole time. There is no downside to saving. You know, I guess you could sacrifice so much of your lifestyle in the present, but I don't think you're going to starve in order to save. You can still live a decent first world lifestyle and put some money away at the end of the month.
Yes. And time is the magic, along with compounding, and having more time to save gets you more. And it's kind of, if you look at 40-year period, that first 20 years, you're going to like, gosh, it just never seems to grow. And then all of a sudden, compounding starts happening, and then you're adding more to it. Then you're like, wow. And what then happens? You have options in life. That's what money allows. You have options. You're not beholden to having to stay in a bad job or not able to help a family member. You have options, and that gives you choices in life. And that's what I don't necessarily look at retirement as that point you leave that job. I look at retirement as replace it with options in life that you could choose not to work or go work somewhere else or continue working. But it also gets better because you know you don't have to there. And I remember a gentleman a few years back, he was just working to work. And he told me, he says, yeah, because of what we had done together. And this is not saying an outcome, but he made a decision, and we're working together, but he had made a decision at this point that he says, you know, because I'd say, well, when are you retiring? And he'd say, you know, it could be any day because of where we're at. I don't have to plan to work long-term. He says, I'm working just because I can work, not because I have to. I said, so when you retire? He said, I don't know. There'll be one day I've had enough. And it was, I think, a couple years later, he called me up. He said, you know, last week was that day I quit. And we always kind of made jokes about, but that's kind of how he was. He had options, and he worked only because he wanted to. And that's where sometimes I'll have a conversation with a family and a particular person's wanting to, you know, like, gosh, you know, I'm kind of tired. I'd like to retire. And I'd say, it's nice when you see their situation, kind of say, you know, you're only working because you want to work. You don't have to. You have options.
Ray, on the North Shore, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Ray?
Yes, sir. Hi. How you doing, Mr. Ricks?
Doing great. You, Ray?
Doing well, thank you. I'm a frequent listener. My question today awesome. Is, thanks, yes, I've learned a lot. My question today is, I was thinking about, if life allows, when I hit my full retirement age, pulling my Social Security, and if I can afford not to spend it, to invest it, to get those additional 36 payments and take that money and invest it, versus waiting until the age of 70 and deferring it and getting that 24% increase going for the rest of my life. What would you think about that? Or would it be better to leave it with SSA until 70?
Two things. Well, I've got 3, 4, 5 thoughts already on that, but we'll narrow it down. How is your health? And you don't necessarily have to answer that.
Fortunately, it's...
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, fortunately, it's good.
Okay. So there's two things you have to say. When you're going to retire, what's that retirement date, and how long you're going to live. So it's a judgment on health that I'm in pretty good health. I think I'm going to be around a while. I'm probably going to forecast you're going to be around longer than you think. So from an investing standpoint, let's tackle that. One reason to defer is living a longer life. You live well past 80. So you should be considering FRA or somewhere there to 70, because living well past 80, you're going to draw a lot more out than if you had started it earlier. So from an investing standpoint, the market, the S&P 500, Vanguard's S&P 500 fund has averaged a about end of last year, the past 21 years, a little bit more than 8%. You know what? How much you get in your Social Security account increase each year you defer beyond full retirement age? It's an 8% increase annualized simple interest every year. So my challenge would be, are you sure you can go and get more than 8% a year by taking Social Security and investing it? But you're also going to pay taxes on it too. So the investment is leaving it there and then turning it on. That's the ticket right there, is just let it grow if you don't need to start it and you think you're going to live a long time. Bad health, not thinking you're going to live a long time, might should start it at FRA. If you're going to live a long time and you don't need it before 70, yeah, that's a reason to wait. Does that help you?
Yes, it does.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, Ray. Keep listening and pass it forward.
Great question. All right, stick with the phones.
Will do. Thank you for the information.
Ray. All right, let's go to John in Metairie. John, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Gregory, I just wondered if you had a feel for what the inflation rate is going to be next year. On my Social Security, I had an increase. I think it was based on COLA. It was 5.9% increase. And I'm just wondering if we're going to experience some type of inflation rate similar next year to what we have this year, in your opinion. I think they set the increase in Social Security in September, so it's really not a full year in 2022. Just wanted to get your opinion.
Yeah, they're increasing it by 5.4%. And yeah, they don't wait to end the year, but they look at it annualized, but not on a calendar year basis. History tells me that we may not have as much inflation next year, but that's no certainty. But inflation isn't going to continue on forever, and inflation doesn't necessarily make the markets unhappy. When we take the worst 15 inflation years, the highest inflation years over the past 100 years, the market average, if you took those 15 years and they were all separate years of highest inflation and put them together and averaged it, the market averaged about 2.5%. So it's not some bad rocky time, but we may have some more inflation because of the easy money policies continuing forward. We have supply issues, so there might be more. It might be more, might be less, but this isn't going to continue for several years, I believe. But we'll pull into something that's probably higher than the 2010s as an average going forward. Those were really low years. I think inflation averaged about 1.5% in the 2010s. We might have more than that going forward. Does that help you, John?
Okay. Yeah, I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Thank you for listening.
All right. Yeah, we have time for one more call. No, we don't.
All right. Well, let's share with everybody how they can get help on from my team and I on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday. Just simply, I've got four offices. For those joining the show, don't know much about me, but I'm a financial advisor, money manager by day, founder, CEO of Gregory Ricks and Associates. And what we do, we help people improve their financial decisions. We can help you with investment decisions, income planning decisions, Social Security decisions. Think of adding a guide to your financial team. Do you have somebody that can help you? Somebody you could reach out and ask questions to. If you need some help, didn't want to call the show, well, call the office. You can leave a message right now and a team member will get back to you on Monday, or just call next week. But if you have a question about Social Security or what to do about investing or what should your young kid do with his Roth account or her Roth account, call the office and ask. We can do you can schedule a phone meeting, you can do a video meeting, or you can come into one of the offices. We're over in Gulfport, Mississippi, Mandeville, Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and Metairie, Louisiana, which is in the New Orleans area. And once again, we're there to help. The office number is 504. For any office, this is the number. It's one number. get you hooked up. 504-832-9200. 504-832-9200. Website's gregoryricks.com. I've got a couple of events coming up.
Wednesday and Thursday of this week, they're going to be in Metairie, which is the New Orleans metropolitan area, just next door to New Orleans at Fleming Steakhouse. And this is the wine, wisdom, and food experience. Now, we understand the wisdom is probably financial, but explain the wine and food part.
Well, we like to have some fun when we get together, break bread. I always like to start off with a sparkling wine and a toast. We're going to have some fun, and I'm going to teach you a few things, help you do better with your money. What do we want to do? There's a financial destination we want to get to. I'll show you how to increase the chance of success in doing so.
And these are the final Wine, Wisdom, and Foods of the year?
Final for 2021.
All right. So when the next ones are scheduled.
We got so much being planned for next year, but this is kind of it for your chance to get in an event and hear me speak in person.
And when the other ones are scheduled, they'll be on gregoryricks.com. There's an events tab. So if you want to go sign up for these events or keep an eye out for the next ones, gregoryricks.com/events, or you can call the office and drop an RSVP over the phone, 504-832-9200, 504-832-9200. Did you mention your four offices?
I did.
You did. You got all that
in? Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Mandeville, Louisiana, Metairie, Louisiana, and Gulfport, Mississippi. Come see us.
All right. That just about covers it then. Hey, thank you very much for hanging out with us today. I realize you could have done anything with the time you spent listening to this show. So whether you're listening to it live or on a replay or on a podcast or whatever, thank you. We really appreciate you sharing that time with us, and we hope we made it worth your while. I mean, we said a lot of stuff. If you're going to absorb it, that's up to you now. All right. We'll do this again. Come back. We'll see you next Saturday. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Gregory Ricks & Associates is an independent financial services firm that utilizes a variety of investment and insurance products. Investment advisory services offered only by duly registered individuals through AE Wealth Management, LLC. AE Wealth Management, Gregory Ricks & Associates, W.J. Blanchard Law, LLC, J. Heath & Company, and Mortgage Gumbo are not affiliated companies. Investing involves risk, including the potential loss of principal. Any references to protection, safety, or lifetime income generally refer to fixed insurance products, never securities or investments. Insurance guarantees are backed by the financial strength and claims-paying abilities of the issuing carrier. This radio show is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be used as the sole basis for financial decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Annuities are insurance contracts designed for retirement or other long-term needs. They provide guarantees of principal and credited interest, subject to surrender charges. Annuity guarantees and protections are backed by the financial strength and claims paying ability of the issuing insurer. Hypothetical examples have been provided for illustrative purposes only. It does not represent a real-life scenario and should not be construed as advice designed to meet the particular needs of an individual situation. Gregory Ricks & Associates is not permitted to offer, and no statement made during the show shall constitute legal or tax advice. Our firm is not affiliated or endorsed by the U.S. government or any governmental agency. The information and opinions contained herein provided by third parties have been obtained from sources believed to be reliable, but accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed by Gregory Ricks & Associates. Neither AE Wealth Management nor advisors providing investment advisory services through AE Wealth Management recommend or facilitate the buying or selling of cryptocurrencies. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.